Oversight's order today is Wednesday, March 25th. There is a quorum. So first on the agenda is House File 1460, Representative Johnson. All right, Representative Johnson, go ahead. Would you like to move your bill, Representative Johnson?
Yes, Madam Chair, I would like to move House File 1460.
Representative Johnson moves House File 1460 to be laid over for possible inclusion in the Public Safety Policy Omnibus Bill. Representative Johnson, I believe you have an author's amendment.
Leal Amendment A1, Madam Chair, that I'd like to move.
Representative Johnson moves the A1 amendment to get the bill in the shape that he would like it. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Representative Johnson.
Madam Chair, I'd like to make one small oral amendment that will keep the bill from moving to the Finance Committee.
Okay, Representative Johnson, state your oral amendment.
On line 2.4, we're going to change the date of the report to the legislature from 2010 to 2011.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion for Representative Johnson.
And to that amendment, Madam Chair, the DOC has advised that if we change that date, then no fiscal note would be needed. So that's why the change was made.
Right.
To the bill, Madam Chair, what this bill does is directs that evidence-based practices policy team study the use of evidence-based practices in Minnesota for community supervision. And by that, I mean, and by community supervision, I mean probation, parole, and supervised release. And as a way of background, just so folks understand, the evidence-based practices and community supervision are policies, procedures, programs, and practices that are data-driven and based in scientific research. It's the way much of corrections is going nationally. EBP, evidence-based practice, is outcome-focused and emphasized practices that produces measurable results. And I know, Madam Chair, that is to your liking. What this study will do will help Minnesota, give Minnesota direction deciding how best to structure the delivery of community supervision services. And again, that's probation, parole, supervised release. And especially within Minnesota's correctional system provides some uniformity to it. What will happen is that the team will report back that putting this together back to the legislature with its finding January 15th, and as I stated, in rather than 2010, in 2011. And that, Madam Chair, is the sum of the bill. With me is Ryan Erdman. If anyone has any questions regarding this bill, he's here to answer any questions.
Questions from members? Seeing none. Oh, Representative Druskowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Johnson, does the agency support the bill?
Representative Johnson.
Madam Chair, Representative Druskowski, the agency supports the bill, and are members of the team, actually, that are be doing it.
Is there anyone in the audience who wishes to testify for or against this bill? Seeing none, the chair lays over House File 1460 for possible, as amended, for possible inclusion in the Public Safety Omnibus Bill. Thank you, Representative Johnson.
Sure.
Members, the bills that we lay over today, you can expect to see as amendments when we mark up the omnibus bill tomorrow. As everyone knows, the omnibus bill has already been released, but you can expect to see these amendments. Is Representative Morrow in the room? Representative Bingham. Okay, Representative Bingham, moves that House File 2022 be laid over for possible inclusion in the Public Safety Omnibus Bill. Representative Bingham.
Thank you. This is a department bill that is coming in. That was brought to me related to notification on predators, offenders in long-term
care.
And here is the superintendent of the DCA that described the bill.
Welcome to the committee, Superintendent O'Malley. Please state your name for the record and go ahead.
My name is Tim O'Malley. I'm the superintendent of the DCA. Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. This bill is designed to make a relatively minor change to a bill that's already in place here, dealing with health care facilities and the requirement for those who are required to register under the sex offender statute to disclose their status to the person running the facility when they move in. The types of facilities we're talking about, there are about 1,300 such facilities in the state. And they would be described as ones that provide a certain amount of health care to the people staying there. It's for a fee, and they provide either supportive or health care services. The types of residents in these facilities are similar to the types of residents that are already covered under the statute, in particular people who check into health care facilities or hospitals, inpatient treatment, those ones already listed there. So this would, again, this would be seen as just probably capturing an area of one that has similar potentially vulnerable adults living there, and it's to try and somewhat close the loophole.
Is there anyone in the audience who wishes to testify for or against this bill? Questions from members? Seeing none, the chair lays over House File 2022 for possible inclusion in the public safety omnibus bill. Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Hamer? Representative Tamar moves that House File 1827 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Committee on Finance with a recommended re-referral to the Public Safety Finance Committee. Representative Tamar, I believe you have an author's amendment.
Madam Chair, I have two, actually. I have the A1 and the A2.
Representative Tamar moves the A1 amendment to get the bill in the shape the author would like it. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion failed. Representative Tamar moves the A2 amendment. All those. We don't have it, Representative Tamar.
I don't know how that is.
Representative Tamar, we just can run and get copies if you want to talk about the bill.
Yeah.
Just want to tell us what that amendment does as you're discussing it, and we'll just adopt it when we get it.
Why don't we wait until I go through the bill, and then it'll be clearer if I could do that.
Great. Go ahead, Representative
Tamar. Madam Chair, and members, House File 1827 was brought to me by the Judicial Branch, and I have several testifiers. This bill is the intent of it is to improve automation and collection for the courts. It will save the courts millions of dollars, we believe, if it's adopted. There are some controversial aspects of the bill, but I think that we're close to resolution on that. So I'm going to just fly through the bill and give you a brief introduction and turn it over to Ms. DeSalle. Section 1 and Section 2 of the bill just basically cleans up language on judges' compensation. Section 3 of the bill is cleanup language from the transition from the state court to the from the state takeover of the county court. Section 4 deals with library fees. Section 6, 7, and 8 provides a statute number on fifth-degree drug offenses. This doesn't alter any of the current statutory sentences on fifth-degree drug offenses, but it makes automation easier, and that will be explained to you by Ms. DeSalle. Section 9 and through 12 of the bill provides a a statute number for driving while impaired, and this is much like the drug offenses. It'll make automation much easier if this is adopted. Section 13 of the bill clarifies the chemical dependency assessment charges, how they're collected. Section 14 of the bill directs fines and forfeited bail from the state patrol to the state treasury. Section 15 clarifies that traffic surcharges can be applied only one per case. Section 16 gives the judicial branch the authority for dealing with judicial employees. Section 17 establishes uniform collection policies and procedures. Section 18 deals with the updates, the fees and fine language relative to Ramsey County District Court. Section 19 proposes uniform distribution of certain municipal fines, with the split being two-thirds to the municipality and one-third to the state when the case is presented on behalf of municipalities, when a case is. Section 20 allows the judgment creditor's attorney to act as an officer of the court to order disclosure of assets. And Section 21 eliminates a time period for destroying probate records after the case has been closed. Section 22 is similar to Section 20. It allows the judgment creditor's attorney to disclose assets, liabilities, and personal earnings, freeing up court staff. Section 23 repeals the court authority to order the imprisonment for non-payment of fines. And Section 24 is also cleanup language on uniform fine schedules. Section 25 establishes authority for the court on unpaid fines refer unpaid fines to collection agencies. Section 26 is similar to Section 22, and that repeals the provision on imprisonment for non-payment of fines. Section 27, this is more of the, this establishes that a conviction for a misdemeanor that was treated as a petty misdemeanor, and that's by inclusion on the payables list, may not be used as an enhancement to a gross misdemeanor if there's a subsequent violation. Section 28, this gives the council, and this was the controversial aspect that we will address, gives the Judicial Council the authority to establish a uniform fine schedule, but I draw your attention to the Section 28 that it does not include targeted misdemeanors, and that's domestic violence cases, violations of orders for protection, indecent exposure, etc. Section 29 deals with due dates for fines. Section 30 clarifies the court ability to refer unpaid restitution to collection agencies, as does Section 31. And finally, Section 32 provides that disbursements of monies collected for prosecution of cases must be paid to the municipality or the governmental subdivision. And now, Madam Chair, the A2 amendment. This, I think I would like Mr. Sal actually to explain this. I believe this is
related to that.
Mr. Sal, welcome to the committee.
Thank you very
much. Please state your name for the record and go ahead.
My name is Sue Dosal, and I am the State Court Administrator. This provision relates to the sections 27 and 28 and 24, actually, that are in the bill. Which does something with the uniform fine and bail schedule that we call the payables list. And I'll talk about this in a minute, what this part of it does, but this would indicate that anything, a third or subsequent offense, would no longer be a petty misdemeanor, but instead, if chargeable by a complaint, it would continue to be a misdemeanor. So that's the provision of this particular amendment that the author is requesting.
Okay. On the A2 amendment to get the bill in the shape the author would like it, all those in favor?
Madam Chair, if I may.
Representative West.
On this, I did have conversations with Mr. Stahl in the course of my office about a half hour ago about some compromise language relating specifically to this. I didn't know this bill was going to be up right away. We did work out what I think could potentially be an arrangement, but I didn't get a chance to speak with the courts about it yet, so I wanted to get an opportunity to speak with them in deference to the courts and possibly reach a compromise solution on this, because I did have an amendment that was going to affect this that may not be necessary if we can reach an agreement.
Representative West, so would it be an amendment to the A2 amendment, or would it be an amendment to someplace else in the bill?
I believe, Mr. Paymar, feel free to nod or shake your head, but I believe it would be an amendment to the A2 amendment.
Is that correct, Representative Paymar?
I'm not.
Representative Paymar.
I'm sorry, Madam Chair. So is this the one that was discussed earlier that you had, that the city attorneys were...
Yes, Madam Chair, yes, it was, but it did relate to a request by the court to include this relating to the third and subsequent offense on the table.
Representative
Paymar. Well, Madam Chair, I guess I would suggest, since we don't have it and you don't have it, if you're all right with this, this still has another stop to make, and you could amend it in the Finance Committee.
Yes. Okay. Madam Chair, It is my intent then to offer, and this is the committee I sit on, so it is my intent to offer my intended amendment without that language tonight, if we can't. I thought I had a little bit of time because I didn't know we were up first on the agenda. So I would offer my amendment that I think the courts are not totally okay with. What my request, Madam Chair, would be that we bring this back after we hear another bill, if we could do that. Because this would probably take about 10 minutes. Okay.
Okay, well, why don't we see if there's anyone in the audience that wishes to testify for or against this bill, so that you can continue to work on it, and we can see if members have questions. Representative Payne, is there anyone in the audience who wishes to testify for or against this bill? Please come to the table, state your name for the record.
Madam Chair, I do have a couple of witnesses that I'd like to briefly address the committee about the importance of this and why we should do it.
Bill Sell, please go ahead.
Madam Chair and members, this Section 27 and 28, let me just first back up and say that the whole purpose of this bill is to automate 1.2 million payables, citations that the courts handle each year out of our 2 million cases. Given the budget crisis that we're in, we're operating short-staffed, 9% short-staffed, we're going to get cuts further. We need to exploit the investment the state has made in automation to try and reduce the cost of handling these 1.2 million payables. So the purpose of this is to automate this. Secondly, is to enforce judicial sanctions. There are many people that fail to pay or appear on these tickets, and we're trying to find tools that allow us to, at a minimum, send these off to collections, so we have a likelihood of collecting and having an actual sanction imposed. And finally, it brings in quite a bit of revenue to the state that is due to the state and local government. So that's the purpose of it. The payables that I spoke to are established by statute, authorizing the Judicial Council to create a uniform fine and fee schedule each year, and that is what we refer to as the payables list. And on the payables list are included both petty misdemeanors and misdemeanors. If a person commits a petty misdemeanor and they pay the petty misdemeanor, it's entered as a petty misdemeanor conviction. If a person fails to appear or pay for a petty misdemeanor, by operation of law, it is deemed to be a guilty plea, and you can enter that as a conviction and send it off to collection. If it is a misdemeanor that is on the payables list, and the person pays that misdemeanor, almost all of them are less than $300. And if you pay that, it is entered by operation of law as a petty misdemeanor. if you have a misdemeanor that's on the payables list and you do not appear and you do not pay that, we really virtually can take no action. So a person who does not pay or appear on a petty misdemeanor is rewarded for that. Now, we could send it off to issue a warrant and have law enforcement, the scarce law enforcement resources, go out, try to find this person, arrest the person, book them, bring them into court, all of that for usually about a $200 fine. And it just isn't happening. We do not have the resources to do that. The other thing that we could do is to, if it's a traffic violation and failure to appear, we can send it to the Department of Motor Vehicles and they can suspend the license. This hasn't been proven to be terribly effective. And so what we're trying to do for those misdemeanors that are on the list and for failure to pay or appear, to have this deemed, if a misdemeanor is on the payables list, to deem in the first place as a petty misdemeanor. So if a person does not pay and does not appear, we can enter a conviction and send it to collection. So that's the purpose of what we're trying to do. Right now, the system, because we do not have the resources to go after these minor offenses, the system actually rewards people who do not show up and do not pay. And that's the purpose of this, is to actually provide in Section 28 that the Judicial Council is authorized to establish this uniform fine and fee schedule, which is already in law. We're just moving a section of it. Subdivision 2 provides that misdemeanors included on the uniform fine schedule are treated as a petty misdemeanor unless the offense was committed so as to endanger the life or property. So endangerment is off. By the A2 amendment, this would indicate that any misdemeanor that's on the payables list and now treated as a petty misdemeanor, if they're after the second offense on the third or subsequent offense, if the charge is brought by a formal complaint, then it remains a misdemeanor. Subdivision 3 of this provides that the defendant must be advised in writing about the payment of the fine, and that if they don't fail to appear, that it will be deemed a guilty plea. And Section 27 provides that the conviction of misdemeanor violation treated as a petty misdemeanor by inclusion on the uniform schedule may not be used to enhance subsequent violation as a gross misdemeanor. So that's what this does.
Representative Mark, my understanding your motion expires as well.
I do. I would like a couple of numbers from the bench.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and go ahead.
Representative Hillstrom and Representative Paymeyer, my name is Chuck Porter. I'm the president of the Minnesota District Judges Association and a judge in the 4th Judicial District. Representative Hillstrom, I'd like to make two points. The first point is that the main thrust behind this bill is to allow for automated collection and processing through the collection process of most of the offenses that the courts face. This will be approximately 1.5 million of the 2 million cases that we deal with are covered under this bill. And we need the additional authority to allow for automated collection. So there's a whole bunch of detail in here in terms of changing statute numbers so that we can identify three-wheeled ATVs from four-wheel ATVs because the fine splits are different and so forth. But a secondary purpose in that regard is also to free up the public defenders from their obligation to appear on cases that generally end up as a petty misdemeanor anyway. We are aware that the legislature is intending to scrutinize the public defender's budget request as they have done the courts. And as a partner in the justice system, we are attempting to do something which will aid the public defenders in their ability to continue to do the things that they need to do. The dispute in this case has to do with what circumstances should cases be excluded from this automated process. And we have preserved, Representative Paymeyer has preserved, a number of circumstances that currently exist for that to occur. For example, this endanger life or property, that's a box that the officer checks on the ticket. Someone who turns right on red at a intersection out in the country, that probably should be a petty. If you turn right on red through a crosswalk in a school zone, maybe that's something that's a higher level of importance. And so if the officer believes that ought to be maintained as a misdemeanor, Representative Paymar's bill has preserved that right. The second has to do with targeted misdemeanors. The concept of targeted misdemeanors, for lack of a better word, is more serious misdemeanors. It's the assaults and domestic assaults and the DWIs and related offenses. Those remain as misdemeanors. There's a suggestion that the Judicial Council should be prohibited from putting those on the payables list. We have no intention of putting them on the payables list, but be that as it may, those remain as misdemeanors. The third way in which these cases are left off, are removed or left off the payables list is this third or subsequent matter. And on that, Judge Guerin and I both want to, I think, represent to you that the vast majority of these cases that start as misdemeanors end up as petties in the first and second instance. That would be, for example, no insurance cases, no driver's license in possession cases of that sort. Generally, the intent of local prosecutors is to have those matters resolved at the lowest possible level with the intention of either getting the person a driver's license or having them become insured. So they're handled as petties in the first or second instance. We have, in the A2 amendment, have proposed that in the third or subsequent offense, those then are misdemeanors. They're off the payables list. If charged by complaint by the local prosecutor, the local prosecutor makes the prosecutorial decision, the place where it belongs, where that decision belongs, and then we handle those as misdemeanors. So the court system does support this bill as suggested by Representative Paymar, including the A1 and the A2. Thank you.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and go ahead.
Thank you, Representative Hilstrom and Representative Paymar. I'm Kathleen Guerin. I'm a judge in the 2nd Judicial District, which is Ramsey County, here in my district, actually. And I'm the chief judge and a member of the Judicial Council. And I support the bill as amended. The amendment, I think, will be welcomed by a number of judges. The vote taken at the Judicial Council to put as many things as we have that were misdemeanors on the payables list wasn't an easy one. It wasn't an easy one. There are still judges who believe many of these things should remain as misdemeanors with mandatory court appearances. It is controversial that our city attorneys, including my own in St. Paul, besides being a judge in Ramsey County, I'm a resident of St. Paul, and my own city attorney, who oppose this because for a number of reasons. One is that they get income from continuance for dismissal matters. Another one is they believe a diversion program would be, helpful to people, and I'll let them talk about that. The reason I support this, despite, good things that can be said as to why it will not be a perfect solution to everything, is that we do not have the resources, and the public defenders do not have the resources to continue to give not just the judicial and lawyer time, but the staff and clerical time to these cases over the whole state as we do now. Many of them are really economic crimes, and the first time, the second time, I think I can still argue they are an economic crime to some sense. You've let your insurance lapse. You can get a DAS if you forget to pay a parking ticket. Your license can be suspended, or if somebody pulls the parking ticket from your windshield. This is a sensitive point, as I have a parking ticket in my purse now, but I'll pay it. you can get a driving after suspension for that. I think many of us also feel that if it is a pattern, your third, your fourth, then you aren't paying attention, then it does become more serious. And so I think a lot of judges will be happy that we, as a branch, have agreed to amend it to allow a third one to be charged by complaint and be a misdemeanor. But we do not anticipate that we will have the resources to either to handle these in the ways in the past that we have handled them. The total system doesn't. So I support the bill. Thank you.
Representative
Hammer,
any further testifiers for you?
No, ma'am. Here, I think that's it.
All right. Is there anyone in the audience who wishes to testify for or against this bill? Please come to the table and state your name for the record and go ahead.
I think you'd have a lot of city folks coming in to testify in opposition as the bill currently stands, but if we can get a deal worked out, maybe they won't.
Okay. Got it. So who is needed to be talking to be working on a deal?
Your Honor, I need the court and the city attorney outside.
Do you need the public defender?
Not really.
Okay.
You never know.
The public defender can stay and testify. You all can go out in the hall and see if you can't work something out. Representative Chamar, do you want to be out in the hall, seeing if you can work something out?
Yeah. I'll let them work it out.
Okay. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is John Stewart. I'm the state public defender. Since I heard Judge Guerin talking about Ramsey County, I realized I had some of the public defender misdemeanor numbers from Ramsey County with me tonight. And just to give you an idea of how many cases are involved here for us as public defenders, in Ramsey County last year, they represented people on 768 driving after suspension cases, 414 no insurance cases, 108 no valid driver's license cases, a little over 1,000 disorderly conduct cases. If some of these cases would go away, that would be a substantial saving in time that would let those lawyers go and do something else of a more serious nature. So I wanted to just provide a little perspective. There are at least a couple thousand cases a year in Ramsey County that might become payables without a threat to public safety under this proposal.
Do members have questions for Mr. Stewart as everyone else is in the hall trying to work out a deal?
Mr. Stewart, Madam Chair, would these suggestions be made if we weren't in a budget crisis? Would they be serious, or would they be dropped, or is it something if the budget comes back we should just keep the way we want to change it now?
Mr. Stewart.
Madam Chair, Representative Cornish, a lot of these cases should have something else happen other than a misdemeanor penalty. For instance, in Austin, Minnesota, there is a diversion program for all driver's license cases where you come in and have court services staff person work with you, and if you come back and get your license valid, you pay a court cost fee and there's no conviction on your record. And the result is then you have a valid and insured person on the road instead of possibly a nonviolent driver's license offender in jail. So I think that there should be something done other than 90-day misdemeanor treatment with these cases anyway. And the problem with the budget is just in a way, it's an opportunity to take a look at some of these practices and say, does this really need to be a misdemeanor?
Representative Cornish, follow
up? I could tell you about my life in the past 10 years.
Representative Cornish, you got 10 minutes. All right, is there anyone in the audience that isn't negotiating who wishes to testify for or against this bill?
Madam Chair, could we bring Judge Guerin back in here and ask her some questions about the Senate recount?
No, Representative.
Oh, okay.
All
right.
All right, Representative Tamar, I think I'm just going to lay this over for 10 minutes and then we'll bring it back. With that, the chair lays the bill over. All right, Representative Morrow, are you still in the room? Representative Morrow, the chair moved House File 1639 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Civil Law Committee. Representative
Mom,
go ahead.
Get
your name for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
I'm
sorry. Madam Chair and members, this is a Department of
Human Services bill regarding some technical changes regarding provisions about the sex offender program run by the state. And rather than have me walk through it, I've got two testifiers here who can talk about the changes that are being made and can explain the reason for these changes, Madam Chair.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and go ahead.
Madam Chair, members, for the record, I'm Dan Storkamp, the Deputy Director of the Minnesota Sex Offender Program. I will walk through the bill quickly and then open up for questions, and then other testifiers will be here to answer those questions as well. Madam Chair and members, the bill before you is our agency bill. It really is an attempt in the Minnesota Sex Offender Program to separate us from the state-operated services and really clarify the Minnesota Sex Offender Program in statute. Section 1 allows state agencies to purchase from the Minnesota Sex Offender Program our vocational work program. This is very similar to the Minnesota MNCORE program at Department of Corrections. This is something the Department of Admin, Management and Materials Division has reviewed and supports. Section 2 of the bill allows the Minnesota Sex Offender Program to have 7 cars with special unmarked plates for our special investigation unit. We currently have a temporary variance from the Department of Public Safety for this variance, and the Department of Public Safety supports this for investigative purposes only. Sections 3 through 6 are definitional changes for the program. Section 1 replaces client instead of patient, which more accurately reflects our treatment program and the environment that we're in. The second defines our community preparation service program. This is the first phase once the individual has completed their treatment in the main program.
I'm going to interrupt you because technically only sections 10 and 11
okay.
apply.
So I would be happy to skip to 10 and 11. Madam Chair, there is one piece that 10 and 11 refers to that's also new earlier. In page 5, sections 20 through 25, we clarify what the Minnesota Sex Offender Program covers for our clients. It covers holds, secure treatment, the first phase as they move out into community preparation services, and into the community. And as Representative Merle would bring this forward on this technical for security pieces and the ability to apprehend if somebody escapes, the current language says secure treatment environment only. This allows it to cover the entire program with all of our clients. Sections 10 and 11 of the language really focus on the escape from that secure environment. Now it's going to be escape from our program at any given point in the process. We currently have 2 individuals in our community preparation service. This is relatively new for us, and that this language really ensures that we can identify those individuals if they escape from the program, or if anybody ultimately gets a provisional discharge and walks away, we could also go after those individuals. This is clarifying language that our lawyers have provided, so it should be no change to the current language, just clarification.
Okay, do you have something to say, or...
Hi, I'm Chair and members. I'm just here for moral support. If,
questions for members?
Representative Cole. Thanks, Madam Chair. To one of the two testifiers, are we speaking just about individuals who have completed their term of incarceration through the Department of Corrections and are now in the sex offender program that that your department runs, or are they still serving their court time as opposed to being committed sex offenders?
You haven't officially introduced yourself, so please you state your name for the record.
Madam Chair, I'm Dennis Benson, the Executive Director of the Minnesota Sex Offender Program.
Commissioner Benson, go ahead.
Madam Chair, Representative Cole, the folks that are in our program are all under civil commitment. So they, for the most part, have completed their correctional sentence. Now, some of them may have corrections time hanging. In other words, they've got supervised release time hanging. So they would technically be a dual commitment until their full sentence expires, but they are under civil commitment.
Madam Chair, I know this isn't the right committee necessarily for this discussion, but I'm just curious, how many individuals have, if any, have successfully completed sex offender treatment here in the state of Minnesota?
Madam Chair and Representative Coles, this is a law that was passed in the early 90s. We've had one release. He later returned. So that's been the extent of the success thus far. We do have two, as Mr. Storkamp indicated, on the Community Preparation Service Program, which is relatively new. So slowly the wheels are starting to turn.
Madam Chair, just a comment. We got to figure out what we're going to do with these guys for the most part. I mean, we're spending $340 a day on them, and we're not getting them better, and I don't know if we can get them better, and I don't know what the answer is to this problem, but it's a big problem for the state of Minnesota, for the taxpayers of the state of Minnesota. And unfortunately, we don't have some other means by which we can deal with these folks a little more in a little more cost-effective manner. But I'm not sure what the answer is. I was just curious, and I'm not surprised to hear that that's the response, because that is, there really isn't much success, if you will, in terms of getting these people out. I don't know what the answer is. I'm sure. I was curious to find out if we had any eureka moments in the last couple of years.
Representative Cornish. I'm curious, who is the originator of the language that wanted to change the word to client for a sex offender, and then also the language refers to NSOP as a secure treatment facility, strike that language and add language as specialized sex offender assessment. And then what's the reason for it? Are we trying to make this look like a nursing home that doesn't have any bad people in it, or what's the social language or comfort language, or why are we changing that from what are dangerous people? I used to drop people off there, and my nephew worked there, and I wouldn't consider these people clients. I'd have another definition. Go ahead.
Madam Chair, Representative Cornish, I'm going to defer to our clinical director. We've had lots of discussions about the terminology. For a number of years, they've been called patients. We would argue that that's not the appropriate title either, for a variety of different reasons. So we've talked about patients, we've talked about residents, we've talked about clients. So I'd like you to hear Janine out, and we do have an idea about where we might go with this if this becomes an issue, because going forward, we don't think patient is the right descriptor either.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair, committee. My name is Janine Aver. I'm the Executive Clinical Director of MSOP. Representative, I can try and take a stab at that. The intention is in no way to take away the culpability of these individuals or their dangerousness. As a treatment provider, having worked with sex offenders, I have watched this population who tends to be fairly manipulative and not quick to take responsibilities for their actions hide behind the term patient. When the civil commitment program was under state operated services, they could use that term to blend into MIND or MR or someone who may be civilly committed for chemical dependency reasons. And I would argue that this is a population that is unique and different from all of that. As a mental health provider, they are here to do treatment, sex offender specific treatment. And the term client lends itself to the process and the mission of MSOP in a way that the term patient does not. That's the intent of the change. I can say that as a psychologist, it's helpful for me to hold my client accountable for their personal change rather for them to take a passive posture as a patient and put the burden back on me as a provider. I'm open to accepting other options for that. That was the one that we came up with that differentiates its mission from a hospital or from a medical model.
Madam Chair, I want to label these people as something really bad, but I don't want to call them clients or patients because I don't consider them that. I'd rather change the criteria that let them into the program and change how we get into the program rather than change their names so that they qualify. I don't want the public to be lulled in. I used to have to look for these people when they got out of control. And so I would rather not have the public be lulled into thinking we got patients and clients out there, but known for what they really are, if you know, dangerous people. And so if you could work on that in the future, somehow describe them as they are and then change the way to get into the program with that label, that makes me a lot more comfortable.
Commissioner Benson.
Madam Chair, Representative Cornish, this came up at our last committee, and we understand the concern, and I think what we will propose, we were taking this to civil justice correct on Friday. we'll put together amendments, and I think we'll call them what they are, civilly committed sex offenders, in the statute. And practically speaking, the facility will understand how we do so.
Representative Morrow?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, Representative Cornish, I don't...
Please talk into the microphone.
Representative Cornish, I know this probably goes without saying, but living in the community where these folks are, I don't take this lightly either, and I'm happy that Commissioner Benson and the others have agreed to talk about the term, but regardless of the term, my primary concern is the security aspects that are before this committee tonight, the escape provisions in 10 and 11.
Is there anyone in the audience who wishes to testify for or against this bill? Seeing none, the chair renews her motion that House File 1639 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Committee on Civil Justice. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion passed. Thank you, Representative Morrow. Representative Mullery, it's my understanding you want to lay the bill over for possible inclusion in the public safety omnibus bill?
Yes,
ma'am. Okay, and Representative Mullery, it's my understanding that you have the A2 amendment?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Okay, Representative Mullery moves the A2 amendment to get the bill in the state you'd like it. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Representative Mullery.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this is a bill regarding animal fighting. We all know about the Michael Vick and other instances of what's going on out there. I don't think anybody supports that kind of treatment of animals. I hope not. And so what we're trying to do is just help the police and law enforcement on these issues to enforce the animal fighting. We're just adding a part that allows the possession of any device or substance with intent to use or permit the use of the same to enhance an animal's ability to fight. And Madam Chair, this this passed the House last year, and then it got into the Senate, and they were into not allowing anything on grosses. I'm sorry. And we do have a fiscal note of zero. Gary Carger, I believe, confirmed that to Representative Paymer or his assistant today. And so we have Keith Streff and Dan Najolik from Minneapolis, and I'm sorry,
Tom
Doty also from Minneapolis to speak on this tonight.
Great. Please state your name for the record, whoever says, and go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members. My name is Dan Najolik, manager of Minneapolis Animal Care and Control, and I thank you for the opportunity to speak to you tonight in regards to the amendment Representative Mullery is proposing. First of all, Minneapolis is a little bit unique in this situation. What we're looking at here is dealing with something. 2 years ago, we had a judge rule subdivision 2 in this statute is unconstitutional, and so we've lost the tool. The language Representative Mullery is proposing is going to help us regain part of the tool of dealing with dog fighting, and so we appreciate your support on this. Real quickly, dog fighting, why is it important? A lot of times people just look to the impact on the animals, but one of the things that studies are clearly showing is the impact and the correlation between animal abuse and animal cruelty and domestic violence and other violence in our communities. And it's more and more studies are showing that correlation and its impact. We see it in the city of Minneapolis. Where we deal with dog fighting is in our highest crime rate neighborhoods. We see it in the situations when we do warrants for dog fighting. It usually goes with other things like narcotics and other violent activity going on in our communities. So dog fighting is not just about the cruelty to animals. It's the impact of violence in our communities and how this plays into the subculture of violence going on in our communities. And it's not solely a Minneapolis issue. This is clearly... The big dog fights don't happen in the city of Minneapolis. It's the outlying edge of the metro where the big fights occur. What happens in our city is the training of dogs and then the street fighting in terms of the alley fights starting out for the low-level fighting. What that does is it creates that culture of violence going on in our community. It creates the desensitization of violence as well. We see greater likelihood for domestic violence in that when we look at the people who we arrest for in relation to dogfighting. So we're asking for your support. Minneapolis has taken up this issue. Like many other cities throughout the country, Chicago took it up last year. In their violence reduction program, dogfighting is a major part of their effort. In Minneapolis, we passed a city ordinance last year where if we can indicate that we believe somebody has been involved with dog fighting with their dogs, we can declare their animal dangerous as well as looking at other consequences. But we don't have the level of consequence to make the cost of doing business in dog fighting great enough, and that's where you can support us in that. So we ask your support on this to give us a greater tool to deal with the dog fighting issues in our community. We're doing what we can. Your support can help us go further with that. I'm going to let my assistant manager, Tom Doty, who deals with a lot of our field operations, speak to three particular ones that we've dealt with recently in our community.
If I could just interrupt you for one second. Is there anyone in the audience who's going to be in opposition to this bill? Representative Mueller, keep that in mind that no one is in opposition to the bill as your testifier is.
Madam Chair, I didn't suspect that there were going to be a lot of people here.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and go ahead.
Tom Doty, Minneapolis Animal Control. Madam Chair, committee members, I just wanted to take a second of your time to say what we're talking about, paraphernalia and evidence of fighting with the animals, is very specific. We see it in every case we go into where there's organized fighting. I wish I had time to show you some photographs of animals that were bitten up over time, scarring in a certain way that indicates animal fighting, and healed scarring that shows animal fighting over time. Treadmills that have been modified cannot be used for a human, only could be used for an animal. I could explain that a little more if you wanted me to. We're not going into homes and looking to gather evidence where people train animals to be healthier. We're looking to go into homes where we have evidence of dog fighting and find paraphernalia, syringes, break sticks, spring poles, different things that we know in the business is only used to pit one animal against another. Thank you.
Representative Mallory. Questions from members. Representative Cole.
Madam Chair, Representative Mueller, I recall this bill from last year, and I also recall that I worked on you with some language, and I don't know if this is that language or not.
Representative Cole, that's when we were working on it this year. I said, let's take the Cole's language and just go with it.
That was a good idea, Representative Mueller. Madam Chair, I guess, I don't know if Representative Lack has looked at this amendment. I know he's busy working on more, not more important things, other things. I'm just curious, as I look at the amendment, and I never was a prosecutor, but thinking about trying to prosecute under this this language, somebody who possesses a device with the intent to use or permit the use of the same, I'm just not sure how challenging that's going to be to prosecute. It seems like it would be a relatively easy case to defend against if it were charged out. Representative Mueller, I don't think I have a big problem with your bill. In fact, I think, as I said, it was my language, so I think that was a good move. But I'm just not sure that we're moving the ball forward here. If every case, it's going to be next to impossible to prosecute one of these.
Madam Chair. Oh.
I think Representative Wett was going to answer. But
okay. Madam Chair, could I point one out? One thing, Representative Coles, you also worked on that language that's in there, and then it got taken out when it went over to the Senate. So it was another part of your language that you had asked the question earlier, and everybody decided to use that language. But Representative Wett.
It must have been a really good idea.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Coles, this is, as you recall from law school, a specific intent crime, and that's the challenge in that is to have the testifier, law enforcement, make very clear in their investigation that this is what it's used for. We have to prove it to a fact finder like a jury. Someone like Representative Cornish or the testifier has to be really exhaustive in the effective reports that they use, plus the photographic documentation and everything else. That's why we're relying on them. If they can successfully submit these things and a prosecutor can prosecute it as a specific intent crime and get some convictions, then we got a horse race. But if not, then it's sort of
their problem.
All right. Well,
they can't submit.
Represent.
Madam Chair, to the testifiers, then do good work. All right. Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. Questions from members?
Madam Chair.
Representative Rutkowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess to the testifiers, I would ask. I like the bill. I'm worried about things like training collars, those types of things for dogs being misinterpreted here. I'm wondering if there's a way to have language that's a little tighter than this. I'm curious what your response is to that. Yeah, hunting training collars, those types of things. The wrong person could interpret those to be something that was used to enhance an animal's ability to fight when indeed it's to train them to retrieve ducks or something.
Please go ahead, state your name for the record.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Keith Seff, and I'm the senior investigator for the Animal Hunting Society in Golden Valley. Madam Chair, Representative Draskowski, I've been practicing now for a couple of days, so I got that pronunciation down now. So. I think I can answer that in regards to the burden of proof is very, very high, even with the existing language here. I think it would be a very big stretch of the imagination to use the breed of dogs typically used by the hunting public and build a felony or gross misdemeanor case as it is now of dog fighting. Also, specific to Section 2 under Representative Mullery's amendment. Previously, we only had the clause above it, number 4. So we built the case out of that one, which is much more ambiguous than what 5 is right now. So it's adding an additional tool to give us an element that we'll be able to address the specific paraphernalia used in dog fighting exclusively.
Madam Chair.
Representative Gaskin.
Thank you, Mr. Streff. I guess I understand the burden of proof, and once the person gets into court and actually proving that they intended to use this for, use something that they're being accused of using with their dog to enhance its ability to fight. But what I'm worried about is people who would get drug into the system to begin with and, be alleged to be using whatever, training collars, whatever. I don't have any idea what type of substances they're using in dog fighting. I do know that dog owners have a lot of different materials that they have, toys, whatever you have. I don't know, but then it's on their back to get out of the system that they don't belong in at that point. That's my concern.
Madam Chair, Representative Sukia, you make a very good point. However, I think the intent of Representative Mullery's bill here. These are mostly cases that I've investigated over the years out state, is the fighter is now getting more sophisticated, they're more mobile, and they don't keep the dogs with the money, they don't keep the fighters with the dogs, and they certainly don't keep the paraphernalia with the dogs. So what we're seeing now is probably a good analogy would be burglary tools. If I stop you with a sack of burglary tools, you're essentially a burglar unless you have some type of evidence to suggest otherwise. This gives us an additional tool now where we know there's an individual fighting, but the guy claims that he just owns the equipment to do whatever he does with these particular dogs. So I think it's an additional layer of opportunity for law enforcement to use the better part of discretion to try and weed out that difference with the hunting dog example.
Madam Chair, thank you. Mr. Streff, the situation I could see is one neighbor calls in the other neighbor and says, I saw Joe next door and he's got this training collar on his dog, and ever since he started using that, this dog has been fighting with my dog more than ever and getting more vicious, and suddenly Joe the neighbor is up on a ticket and then he's there to defend himself. That's my concern. Is there a way to make it more specific and maybe put some of the language of some of the specific substances and devices that you see normally, and if it's not good enough next year, add the additional ones that were left out.
Madam Chair.
Representative Griskowski, we're laying this bill over for possible inclusion tomorrow, and there's going to be an amendment. Maybe you and Representative Mullery could at least talk to each other between now and then and make some decisions about what you'd like to do, and maybe you can or maybe you can't come up with some agreement.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Bingham.
Thank you. Representative Griskowski, maybe Representative Mullery and the fine officers here would be able to show you some of the instruments that are being referred to, and then it might help you out a little bit. Kind of with the intent on it. Representative Mullery.
As I said, Representative Driskowski, this language was worked out last year after a lot of that stuff, and as I said, Representative Coles, I think, was the one that drafted the final language. Everybody was agreed with it. It passed the floor, as I said. Obviously, if you start looking at, well, I guess you're not an attorney, so if you start looking at laws, you have to convince a judge or jury that this is, the prosecutor's not even going to take it unless they think they got a really good chance of winning. And you don't convince, if it's, you know, some guy that's got something for his hunting dog, that's not going to sell to a jury.
All right, with that, the chair lays over House File 728 for possible inclusion in the public safety on the
agenda. Madam Chair, do you want to send this around? Or?
That's fine, Representative.
Okay,
thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Paymer, are you ready?
Yes.
Okay, the chair recalls House File 1827. Representative Paymer, I believe you have the okay, Representative Paymer, I believe that we are working off the A1 amendment. So I believe that we actually need to reconsider the A1 amendment to get it back before us, or are we working off the A3 amendment? We're working on the Members, it's my understanding that we have to reconsider the A1 amendment in order to change the A1 amendment to deal with the cross-reference so we can adopt the A3 amendment.
Okay, then I would make that motion.
All right. Representative Mullery. Sorry, Representative Paymer. I'm still thinking about Doug, Representative Mullery. All right, Representative Paymer moves to reconsider the A1 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Representative Paymer, it's my understanding that we need to delete lines 2.1 to 2.3 on the A1 amendment. Is that correct? That's correct. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Paymer moves the A3 amendment to get the bill in the shape the author would like it. All those in favor signify by
saying.
Madam Chair.
Yep. What are we doing here with A3 now?
We're going to adopt the A3 and then there's an agreement. Then we're going to let them describe what they want.
Okay.
Thank you,
Madam Chair.
The author would like it.
You were being very efficient and I wanted to make sure I was understanding what was going on the floor.
Representative Paymer moves the A3 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Representative Paymer.
Madam Chair, I think I'd let Representative Lesch describe the, this is his language, and it's some comfort language for the city attorneys, and I think we have a resolution here, and if there are still some outstanding issues, we'll have time to correct them in finance.
Representative Lesch.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members, this does several things. First of all, it includes the compromise language that this is effective on third or subsequent offense. And you can see that in the first handwritten script there on line 1.6 on the A3 amendment. Subsequently, it sunsets this provision, turning misdemeanors into petties for the purposes of the payment schedule after 2 years. There's also the additional provisions on lines 1.4 and 1.5
changing the date. That is something, members, that still may be up for consideration. Judge Porter mentioned to me they'd like to actually be able to use this for an entire 2 years, and I told him I'm sure that Representative Hamer wouldn't have an issue with modifying that in finance pending determination of when they can actually roll this thing out. And finally, it includes on 1.2 and 1.3 that these modifications submitted to the legislature for approval, and that's the agreement, members and Madam Chair. So,
questions from members?
Madam Chair.
Representative Cole.
Maybe for Representative Kamar, and I know this is not the Finance Committee, but Representative Kamar, if we do this sunset, how does that affect your tail target?
Representative Kamar.
And we can discuss that further in finance, Mr. Chair, but I'm not sure if you have any comment on that. I don't have a big problem with it, Representative Lesh. I didn't have a problem with it before the amendment, though, either. So I'm just curious if this gives you a further tail problem.
Representative Tamar.
Madam Chair, Representative Coles, I suspect that it would, but we will have a better, clearer answer when we get to finance.
Madam Chair, I think, you know, from my perspective, I'm happy moving this out of here like this tonight, but, you know, Representative Lesh, Chairman Paymar has a tail target as well that he's going to meet, so we're going to have to figure out how we do that and whether, you know, where we're going to find the money if we don't do it here.
Representative Tamer, it's my understanding from staff that we did not adopt the A1 amendment, that we adopted the change to the A1 amendment. So we need to adopt the A1 amendment. So Representative Tamer moves to adopt the A1 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Representative Lesh and Representative Tamer, I'm certain that between now and finance you're going to work out the issues of Representative Tamer's fails. So is there anyone in the audience who wishes to testify for or against this bill?
Madam Chair, are we going to move that A3 amendment then, or did we already do that?
We already adopted the A3 amendment.
Oh, that's right, because we were putting it in the state that the author wanted.
Correct.
Now I remember.
All right. Seeing no one in the audience who wishes to testify for or against this bill, Representative Tamer renews his motion that House File 1827 as amended be recognized. Please come to the table, state your name for the record, and go ahead.
My name is Roger Fellows. I'm the prosecutor for Brooklyn Park, and just wanted to make a few comments because I think there's some things that, while there is an agreement that's being worked on now, that we need to be clear about. Number one, there's still language in this bill that says that we're going to certify misdemeanors as petty misdemeanors. And that's important, I think, for law enforcement for a number of reasons. There's both case law and statutory law that affects when you can put somebody in custodial arrest, when you can do searches, and when you can tow vehicles, depending on the kind of charge that you're pushed with. Now, I know there's language saying that we're not going to change any arrest power, but if there's legislative language that says these are now petty misdemeanors, I can virtually guarantee you the next thing that's going to happen is every defense lawyer is going to say, this is certified as a petty misdemeanor. You have no authority to make a custodial arrest. You have no authority to do a search of the vehicle or the person under these circumstances, where currently there is authority to do that. And finally, you may not have the authority to load the car. And there's case law from Varnado on forward and other statutory law that I think needs to be researched. I think this is a serious problem we're going to have with law enforcement on the streets in terms of where is their arrest authority and what liability are we going to set out for police officers and state patrol who are making stops that now they know are misdemeanors and are now going to be called petty misdemeanors under this. And while I understand that there's some language that's being considered, I think it's very important that we lock that down early because of the liability of everybody from the cities and the police departments when they make these arrests. You know, I understand the financial situation that we're in, and I'm sorry I didn't get to hear Mr. Stewart's discussion on the public defender ramifications on this. I can tell you that in Hennepin County, when I do these, I probably get 50 or 60 payables every week for a two-block period of time where I deal with 50 or 60 people. Maybe one or two of those has a public defender appointed in these cases. The ones where there's accidents, probably a few more of them. This is not all about efficiency. And I wish to say that because there's some real public safety concerns when we make misdemeanors into petty misdemeanors. AAA did a survey, finished up in 2008, that one in five fatalities have involved with them unlicensed drivers, not just uninsured, unlicensed drivers. When we go into a situation that all we're trying to do is create money, I think we miss the point. When Jack Davies was a teacher of mine, which tells you how long ago I went to law school, he liked being in the legislature because he practiced law on a wholesale level. I practice law on a retail level. And you have to treat each individual person differently. I am concerned about the 2 and 3 year enhancement law. I think it's an improvement. I am concerned that if you're charged with no insurance twice in 10 years in Hennepin County or any place, that those are payable. And you have to commit two more offenses before I can even bring you into court. That is a public safety issue that we need to talk about. If no insurance isn't going to be a crime anymore, then let's say this. We are decriminalizing certain crimes with this bill. I understand that there are some efficiencies that we can have by making some misdemeanors into petty misdemeanors. And there are some that I will grant you ought to be petty misdemeanors. That leads me to the other part of in your bill, I think, section number one under section 28. And that is, we ought to at least have a public hearing when things are put on the payables list. And while the Judicial Council has put a number of things on there, and I agree with a lot of them, there are some things I don't agree with. And I think there needs to be public hearing to establish a payables list. So if we're going to say something's not a crime, then let's stand up and say something's not a crime. Because when I go to court, I need to be able to say this is a crime or this isn't a crime. When the payables are delegated to another organization, and I have no quarrel with Judge Porter and the folks on the Judicial Council, because I think they do a good job. But I think there are public policies that are involved here when we make misdemeanors, petty misdemeanors. We have liability issues for the cops. We have public safety concerns that I don't think have been totally addressed yet. And it also eliminates some of the authority that cities have to address crimes. One of the payables you may or may not know is a careless driving. So if you're driving 120 miles an hour down the road, you can go pay that, unless they check endanger life or property. So what do you think is going to happen on every one of these payables where the officers aren't happy? They're going to check endanger life or property, and we haven't saved anything. We haven't saved anything. I think there needs to be some discussion on what goes on the payables list and the consequences of making crimes into petty misdemeanors. And I'll limit it to that. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Cole.
Madam Chair, the witness, is it your opinion, sir, that the language here on the amendment that we just adopted, the A3 amendment, that says that we're treating these as petty misdemeanors for disposition purposes, is it your opinion that that's not enough to get around the issues that you discussed with regard to arrests and the ability to do searches of individuals and their vehicles?
Representative Cole, thank you. Representative Cole, thank you. The answer is I don't know. This language is so new that I suggest that this is something that needs to be looked at. I am concerned that if we say that misdemeanors become petty misdemeanors, the disposition controls what a crime is. A felony can be a petty misdemeanor if you sentence them to less than $300. The crime is what the sentence is. I am concerned at the point of arrest, officers need to have some certainty that they have custodial arrest powers, search powers, and also towing issues.
Madam Chair, I continue to be comfortable with moving this forward, but the witness has raised an interesting point. I have no, as I said before, I never practiced criminal law, it's an interesting point. I don't think that. I think we want to be careful with the effect of this. I think we want to be pretty thoughtful and careful about it. I'm not sure that it is. I'm relatively comfortable with this language, but again, I haven't done any of the analysis or looked at the case law to see if that's going to provide any problems for us here in Minnesota. But Representative Paymar, I guess I'd encourage you to at least think about that issue and make sure that we're covered.
Representative Paymar.
I was wondering if that council could just respond briefly to the comment so that this on the record.
If someone has their cell phone on, that's what's causing the buzz. Judge Garen, please go ahead.
It brings us back to the fact we make hard choices in hard times. Well, there's a couple. That's the first thing and the most important thing I have to say. There are many people who would like these matters to be dealt with with extensive time, judicial time, lawyer time. We cannot do that with in our present budget situation. Regarding his analysis of the legal consequence, I have serious questions as to whether that's a correct interpretation. But I'm not going to give. We'll have to wait until it comes before me to give an opinion. But and the public safety issues, I keep hearing that. I was at a criminal justice forum, multiple meetings of the criminal justice forum called by the Chief Justice, which with many members of the criminal justice community. There wasn't a mistake at first, but the city attorneys were not made part of that. That was remedied later. But we were told multiple times by the Department of Public Safety that there is no difference in the percentage of drivers who are insured, who drive with insurance, in states where driving without insurance is a crime and states where driving without insurance is not a crime. I don't think that's a valid public safety argument. The thing about the argument that unlicensed drivers cause more accidents, I don't know that. I'm not going to argue with those findings, but I'm not convinced and have not been presented with anything in terms of evidence-based practices that indicate that prosecuting people for driving without a license stops them from driving without a license.
Madam Chair, I just say I like to speak with the prosecutor after this meeting, but I don't see a big problem. We're towing less and less vehicles all the time because of the pain it is anyway, and I don't know why I'd want to make a custodial arrest off of one of these payables. If it turns into something else where the person is combative or a jerk, then it isn't a payable anymore. It's something else, and we can still arrest them. So I don't see a big problem here, and I don't think on a petty misdemeanor they don't have a right to a public defender, right, and they don't have a right to ask for a jury trial. So I think there's a lot of savings here, unless you could convince me maybe between committee meetings we could work on it. But I don't see a big problem as an enforcement officer with these payables.
Mr.
Fellow. Thank you. You're right, they don't get jury trials on the petty misdemeanors, and I don't think that would change at all. What I am concerned about is that there are cases that ought to be misdemeanors, and a lot of arrests for petty misdemeanor and for these moving misdemeanors that are deemed to be payable turn into a lot more. There's recovery of guns, there's drugs. I'll bet any officer in the street, as I'm sure you would know, these things turn into more. And if you don't have a reason to make the stop and do at least an investigation, those cases are lost because the evidence is lost. And it started with Varnado in 1998 and the string of cases that followed. I'm just concerned that we be sure if we go forward. And maybe there is common ground that we can come to here, but I just need to raise these issues because I have serious concerns about that. And I wanted to mention also, Judge Buren mentioned, that the effectiveness of this. When people come into my court, when I am sitting as the prosecutor, I'm not the judge, clearly.
We have better people than that.
Than I. These people don't plead guilty. They talk to me first. And virtually every suburban Hennepin County prosecutor, we talk to people. And we'll say, look, your license is suspended. Go away and come back with a valid license, and if you do, we'll keep it off your record. These people ought not to lose their license if they just didn't pay a fine because they didn't know they lost their license because of it. And there's a lot of people driving with a suspended license because they got a parking ticket or somebody in a car got a parking ticket and they never paid it. We work with these folks all the time to keep them from court trials, to get the matters resolved in the retail practice of law. And we'll continue to do that. We don't, but if we make them payable, they never get to see us unless they say we want to see the prosecutor, and then they go through two court proceedings. They go to hearing officer and then get signed up for court to see me. So we've doubled the amount of work that we need to do in order to get people back.
Okay.
Representative Cornyn.
I hate to argue as an attorney, but I think you're interpreting wrong. I'd like to hear from the judge here. Would you articulate a reasonable suspicion to stop a vehicle? I don't think it matters if it's a petty misdemeanor or misdemeanor. It's a violation of the law. And if it goes into something more, then it goes into something more. Then you don't have the petty anymore. Then you've got something more serious where you can charge them. So I'm having a hard time following your interpretation. I'd like the judge to comment on this.
Go ahead.
Cornish.
I'm not going to give you an advisory opinion on that, of course, what you aren't expecting me to, but certainly if you have an articulable suspicion for the stop and you have reason to search for officer safety, you don't need a misdemeanor in order to do those two things. I didn't come up here to speak on that point, but I think that's your answer.
All right. Representative Paymar. Doug Porter.
Representative Hillstrom, I wanted to speak to Mr. Fellow's point about the input into the process of putting matters on the payables list. Two points on that. The first is we sought input during the time when the Judicial Council was considering amendments to the payables list this year. We got an enormous amount of input from the DNR about driving on logging roads. We got no input from any city attorneys on any of these issues. So we'd be delighted to have someone other than a staff attorney from the SCAO go through the statutes and say these are the technical changes we want made. We'd rather have somebody else do that than us. The second point, and just quickly, is under the current law, the Judicial Council is obligated to submit the list in July with an effective the following January, subject to legislative change during that period. Precious little legislative change takes place between July and January. So we changed the date in Representative Paymar's bill to submit the list in January and have it effective in July, where maybe precious little legislative change takes place in that period too, but at least you have the opportunity to do so.
Thank you. Representative
Black. Thank you. And I appreciate Mr. Fellow's comments, too. As a city attorney, as a prosecutor, I would love to be in a position to vote against this bill in its entirety. There's no mistake about it. Mr. Fellow is correct. We are decriminalizing a lot. The reason I worked with folks to try to reach a compromise is the courts have already said they're doing this. The courts are going to do this regardless. They're decriminalizing. We're not giving them the money to do their job. They can't do what they are constitutionally and legally required to do. So in order to avoid what could potentially become a constitutional crisis, we've tried to craft something that will pass muster and have hopefully portions of it a two-year sunset. So that's why I'm supporting it.
Questions from members? Seeing none, Representative Paymar renews his motion that House File 1827 as amended three times be referred to the Committee on Finance with the recommended re-referral to the Public Safety Finance Division. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Paymar. Representative Winkler.
Mr. Chair, can I ask you a question about the Senate recount, Madam Chair?
Chair moves that House File 2045 be laid over for possible inclusion in the Public Safety Policy Omnibus Bill. Representative Winkler.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members. The House File 2045 is part of a series of bills that have been passed last year and hopefully will be passed this year, dealing with the ongoing and changing field of emergency management. Emergency management in general has changed a great deal and has continued to evolve since September 11, 2001. And one of the things that has really...
Representative, could you take your comments out in the hall so that we can keep going? Representative Winkler.
I wasn't offended, Madam Chair. The success, because of limited resources for public safety in general and emergency management, success in emergency preparedness depends on coordinated efforts between state, local, regional, international, and interstate entities. With these limited resources, one of the things that the state does is knows where it can call up resources as needed. And one of the ways that we help make that those special teams, if you will, more likely to help is by making them state employees when they are called up pursuant to the direction of the state emergency management, the director of Homeland Security Emergency Management. And so when they're called up and when they are asked, they are treated as state employees for purposes of worker compensation, indemnification, and tort claim defense. That's what House File 2045 does. It applies that protection to special teams that have been called up. Specifically, the need arises here for collapse strike teams and incident management, or is that what you call it? Incident management? Yeah, incident management teams. And with me is Chris Idy to answer questions.
Question from members. Is there anyone in the audience who wishes to testify for or against this bill? Seeing none, the chair lays over House File 2045 for possible inclusion in public safety on this bill. Thank you, Representative. Representative Winkler, while you're sitting there, do you want to hear more controversial bill, or I hope it's not controversial?
I don't carry controversial bill. Good ideas or not so good ideas.
Representative Winkler, it's my understanding that House File 1554 is going to the General Register. So the chair moves House File 1554, be recommended to pass and be referred to the General Register. Representative Winkler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This bill is similar in theme, although it applies to the Department of Health and the specific concern about major public health emergencies that might hit the state. This bill has been through a couple of committees already, and I think it's focused primarily on paragraph C on page 3, which focuses on who may and in what circumstances we can use peace officers to help enforce quarantine, transport, isolate, etc., in the event of a public health emergency. And again with me is Aggie Lighthizer from the Department of Health, who can answer questions.
Questions from members. Seeing none, is there anyone in the audience who wishes to testify for or against this bill? Seeing none, the chair renews her motion that House File 1554 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the General Register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Winkler. President Johnson. President Johnson. President Johnson moved that House File 2027 be laid over for possible inclusion in the public safety omnibus bill. Representative Johnson, I believe you have the A1 amendment.
That's correct, Madam Chair. I would like to move the A1 amendment.
Representative Johnson moves the A1 amendment to get the bill in the safety. The author would like it. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Briefly, the purpose of this bill is to assist probation officers and pretrial release agents in monitoring probation and pretrial release conditions. And what it does is it clarifies the agent's ability to do compliance checks regarding whether it's curfew or weapons or alcohol, drugs, that sort of thing. And lastly, I'll say the probation or pretrial release person is also made aware of and agrees to this as part of their supervised release conditions of probation. So that, in sum, Madam Chair, is the bill.
Questions from members. Representative Cole.
Madam Chair, Representative Johnson, why do we need Subdivision 1? I really dislike purpose sections and statutes, but can you tell me why we need that?
Representative Johnson.
I think with purpose, the purpose is, that, and I didn't come up with that part of the amendment, is just to provide clarity, to kind of provide, make it clear that this isn't a targeted search for suspected restricted items, but rather something that was set forth for probation officers or pre-release agents to enforce the conditions that were set forth by the court.
Madam Chair, I really dislike purpose sections, and I always move to delete them, and I usually fail, so they're of no legal impact or effect. They're essentially meaningless, and Madam Chair, I move to delete lines 1.5 to 1.7.
Representative Johnson? Representative Mallory.
Madam Chair, I totally disagree with Representative Call's. The famous case in the mortgage foreclosure is the Blaisdell case, and the U.S. Supreme Court relied on the purpose clause in that put in by the Minnesota legislature.
Representative Johnson?
I'd recommend opposing said amendment and keep it as it is.
All right. All those in favor of Representative Cole's amendment to delete Section 1 signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion fails. Representative Johnson?
That's it for me.
Is there anyone in the audience who wishes to testify for or against this bill? Seeing none, the chair lays over House File 2027 for possible inclusion in public safety on this bill as amended. Representative Hilton, would you like to move your bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to move that House File 2063 be recommended to pass. Does it need to go to finance? And be re-referred to the Public Safety Finance Committee.
From Cynthia Bill, Madam Chair.
Members, this is the report bill that I promised you all would come. 2063 deals with the Department of Public Safety. As you know, we kind of have oversight in our name, and this is my best attempt to come up with some criteria that should be in the report. It's my understanding that the department may be here to give some input. What I've asked them is, if this isn't the right criteria to put in, please tell me what is the right criteria between now and the next committee.
Okay, is there anybody in the audience that would like to testify to House File 2063? Please come to the table, state your name, and welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Mary Ellison. I'm Deputy Commissioner with the Department of Public Safety. We haven't had a chance to talk with the author of this bill in any great length. Mr. Campion attempted to reach her today, and they just simply didn't connect. I think we certainly are willing to provide a performance report or anything really that would be helpful to the legislature. I think we have some concerns about some of the duplication in some of it, and then there's one thing that we wouldn't be able to do under the current practice, and then there's a couple areas that are just vague. And so I think what we need to do is sit down with the author and figure out what might be a more specific criteria that we could report on.
I'm sure she looks forward to that. Representative Hilstrom, do you have anything else to add or in response?
That's it, Madam Chair. I'm just looking for something that will be meaningful for us to use. I don't like reports that are not meaningful.
I look for that too, Madam Chair. Any other questions from members? Okay, seeing none, Chair Hilton, would you like to renew your motion?
Madam Chair, I renew my motion on House File 2063 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the public safety, which be re-referred to the Committee on Finance with recommendation that it go to the public safety.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Representative Hilton, to your next bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The same is with House File 2065. I would ask that members recommend that House File 2065 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Committee on Finance with the recommendation that it be sent to the Public Safety Finance Committee. Members, this is also looking at the Department of Corrections performance report. And the Department of Corrections actually did send me some sample language that they would like to see for the change in this bill. However, we just have not had an opportunity to talk about it or flesh it out further. Again, I would like the performance report to be useful, and I think we did a good job having hearings this year, and I'd like the next time to be more helpful.
Okay. Anybody in the audience want to testify on this bill? I do see the department in here. Please state your name for the record, and welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, and Barbara Cox from the Department of Corrections, and we've spoken with the chair about this. We had some ideas, though very late in the day, admittedly, that we think will make the data more meaningful for you, and we think will also, make it easier for us to report. So I kind of look at this as an ongoing conversation with the chair, and we appreciate your interest.
Okay, any questions? Representative Cole.
Madam Chair, Chair Hilstrom, it sounds to me as though you're willing to continue to work with both corrections and public safety.
That's correct, Representative.
Wonderful. Madam Chair, on line 2.14, Representative Hilstrom, you used the term average facility per diem. What do you mean?
Representative Hilstrom.
Thank you, Representative Cole. The average facility per diem is one of the things that we already have in the report. And Representative Paymar is currently just heard a bill regarding Representative Hilty about what per diem should be made up of. And so I would assume that whatever we decide, that will be the number. And we can change the language to match whatever we call it in statute.
Further questions, Representative Cole?
No, thank you, Madam Chair.
Any other questions? Thank you. Chair Hilton, would you like to renew your motion?
With that, Madam Chair, I move that House File 2065 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Committee on Finance with the recommended re-referral to the Public Safety Finance Committee.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Carries unanimously, Madam Chair. Where did you go? Did you go? Can I get a motion to approve the minutes for the March 24th meeting? All right, thank you, Representative Lesch. Any questions, changes? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion carries, and then I'll back to you. Members, we have two bills that we heard that have gotten a fiscal note, and so they do need to go to Representative Tamar's committee. We've already heard House File 1039, which is Representative Smith's provision clarifying for an inmate conviction for assaulting a correctional officer. It's my understanding that Representative Smith does challenge the fact that it has a fiscal note, but currently it has a fiscal note, and so we're going to send it to Representative Tamar's committee, and if you can work it out between now and tomorrow, maybe we'll see it as an amendment to the omnibus bill. So House File 1039, the chair moves that House File 1039 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Committee on Finance with the recommendation that it go to the Public Safety Finance Committee. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The second is House File 600, which is Representative Thielen's controlled substance offense minimum fine disbursement authorized to juvenile substance abuse court programs. It's my understanding that that too came back with a fiscal note, and so that needs to go to Representative Kamar. So the chair moves that House File 600 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Committee on Finance with the recommended re-referral to the Public Safety Finance Division. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. With that, this meeting is adjourned.